The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It has been a while. Longtime colleague of Dory's stepping back into the studio for unknown reasons. But a guy like Dory can have a day off whenever he wants.
Absolutely. Welcome.
So, thanks, Ursula. Always great to be back in the studio. Great to be back with my old producer, Nicole. Watch her wild success and just do whatever she tells me to do, which is really the key to the Dory Monson phenomenon. That and the Hawks, I think, is a key. But it's always a pleasure to be here. You'd think that, by the way, with the election over, you know, most of the yard signs away, once in a while you see somebody who's adamant and either they're super proud of who it was that they supported, so they've still got them stuck in their yard, or they're super defiant about the fact that their candidate got shellacked and they leave it up on their yard. And that's a little painful to see because I think most people just want to take a deep breath and say, all right, I would like at least through Christmas to have no political stuff. Let's just get rid of it for now. Except those same people can't help themselves and still check Twitter for a certain United States president and they get distracted by that. But they wish they could just have peace on earth for at least peace in the United States for a nice month and a half, 2 month period. But that's not to be because we already have significant local news about politics in Seattle here for The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, big local.
One of the interesting things about Seattle City Council races this year was there's a number of candidates that were promising to challenge the status quo in Seattle. Seattle's been more focused on making a national presence for themselves, making national statements, making political statements, instead of actually governing the city and focusing on what the city needs. You have tent cities decorating what was once the Emerald City. You have people who arrive from out of town who haven't been to Seattle for a while are remarking about how unpleasant it is, how violent it is, how aggressive it is, and how ugly it is. Because you've got these encampments along the entryways into Seattle, all public spaces. And so you have this new crop of candidates saying, hey, look, this is in part a failure of government, and we want to step in and present some different ideas and give people an alternative to what has been the socialist view of Seattle and the socialist programs of Seattle. So a guy like Christopher Rufo steps up to the plate and it plans to challenge Mike O'Brien. Now, let's face it. The odds are long. You know, he's a young documentary filmmaker. I've met him a few times myself at various locations. He's done some work with Discovery Institute downtown. He's worked alongside and been at Washington Policy Center events. But he says in his launch of his campaign that he's a guy who wants to take good ideas wherever they come from and doesn't like the ideological divide and wanted to focus on some solutions for the homeless crisis. So all of that seems perfectly reasonable, right, to say, look, we need if people are going to choose the leadership they have in Seattle, they need options. You know, you can't complain unless the people have options. So he steps up to the plate and says he's going to challenge Mike O'Brien. So obviously the incumbent is going to have the advantage. Obviously, ideology in political campaigns matters because it energizes a base and they get all excited about it. So O'Brien's going to be excited there. Anybody who gives a hint of being tolerant toward a conservative base is instantly frowned upon in some circles in Seattle. In fact, when I was on Facebook, when I saw Rufo make his announcement, I saw a comment thread on there where one person says, well, he seems like a nice guy, but I saw that he was at an event by, you know, a conservative group in town. And that I'm suspicious of that. Well, we're going to dig deeper into him. And I thought, does attendance at an event now disqualify you if you've attended an event of someone you disagree with? Then that person must be a suspect for the rest of time. But anyway, Rufo said he wanted a new method of doing business in Seattle, a new civility. He announces, and then he's already out. Today, he sent an email out to friends of his campaign saying, I got to leave. And it's not because he wanted to leave. It's because of the tolerant atmosphere in Seattle. And I use the word tolerant sarcastically. He says, friends, I'm writing to you with a heavy heart. After spending the past 2 days in discussion with my family, I'm terminating my campaign for Seattle City Council. I had hoped this would be a campaign of ideas, but I quickly discovered that the activists in the city had no interest in ideas. Since the campaign launch, they have harassed and threatened my family nonstop. He said, you know, I was prepared to take the heat, but they focused their hatred on my wife and children. They've made vile racist attacks against my wife, attempted to get her fired from Microsoft, threatened sexual violence. They've gone so far as to post hateful messages to my 8-year-old son's Facebook page. I know that as the race progresses, the activists will ratchet up their hate machine and these attacks will intensify. So then he expresses disappointment. He's going to give all the money back to supporters, you know, the usual thing. But basically, the activists have won. The worst element of Seattle, the elements that want to bully and oppress anybody who disagrees with them, win by making sure that people will not have actual choices in the campaign. That, I mean, I hope that we were trying to reach out to Rufo. I hope that each one of these threats was reported to police. I hope that they gather it up and find the person who made it and prosecute them. I don't have a lot of hope for that. You know, I had a threat myself after an event. I introduced a well-known conservative figure. I'd never met that person before in my life, by the way, but I was asked, will you introduce this person? I said, sure. And I did. And next thing I know, I got somebody emailing me, telling me what my home address was, what time I'm away from work, who's at home alone during that period of time. Obviously a threat toward my family. Very creepy. Now, I filed a police report, but I never heard anything more about it. I would have liked to. At this point in time, I'd like to know what is the reaction of the city going to be when they find out this guy had to leave. His wife suffers racist attacks, and by extension, of course, his children. The city that prides itself on tolerance now has people fleeing the political circle because of the threats of violence. And by the way, for the national media, this is not Trump supporters. 93% of Seattle voted against Trump. This is not Seattle Trump supporters, right? This is Seattle leftists threatening this guy and getting him out of Dodge. So what's the reaction of Seattle going to be? What's the reaction of the other Seattle council members going to be? And what are they going to do about it? What are they going to do about the fact that people can't even feel safe challenging the status quo in Seattle just to have a debate about ideas? And what kind of a city do you want to be if people can't feel safe offering people that choice of ideas? It's a dangerous road we're on. And if there's just silence, then and silence from those who are elected, I mean, O'Brien should be the loudest one about this. He should be the loudest one saying, hey, this cannot stand. You know, an attack on him is an attack on me. We need to have the debate. By the way, that would actually that would be a reflection of better character. But this is not the kind of thing that can stand if the city expects to have a legit debate and expects to be a free city. Next big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Yesterday, the Seattle City Council passed the new police contract, but not without controversy and not without a number of council members expressing regrets about the very thing that they were passing. What makes it controversial and what has them with buyer's remorse even before they bought the contract? Here to talk about with us is reporter Hannah Scott. Hannah, what's the controversial nature of the contract with police?
So there's a series of issues that were raised by the Civilian Community Police Commission, various activist groups and community members that said that this rolls back reforms, hard-fought reforms that came after the DOJ consent decree from 2012, as well as legislation passed by the City Council last year that enhanced all of those accountability measures. So among the main concerns are that it said that the contract superseded that legislation that was passed by the city last year whenever there was conflict. It also elevates the burden of proof required when you're firing an officer. If that firing is going to lead to him having a difficult time getting other law enforcement work. It requires that you have proof beyond the preponderance of evidence. So it's an elevated standard. Those were some of the issues of concern. And depending on who you talk to, there could have been more than a dozen. Just overall, the spirit of it was that it was rolling back reforms. And some of the council members admitted there were some issues. There were some that they highlighted. Lorena Gonzalez, who pushed all of the council members for yes votes on this, she noted that there were three, I believe, including a couple that I just mentioned, in a separate resolution that she got passed, basically requiring the city attorney to ask the federal judge overseeing consent decrees to review this contract after they passed it. And she said overall, though, as did many of these council members, this was really strong on reform. But ahead of that vote, it was not enough for the opposition. They were very passionate.
This contract flies in the face of the work that communities have been doing for years to achieve police accountability in a way that we can at least have a way to access justice.
Going back to 2010, when John T. Williams was murdered and Officer Ian Burke got away with it without being prosecuted, we need police reform.
This isn't about whether or not people are making a living wage, because people are making a living wage. People are also dying.
So plenty, half the people in the packed city hall had that perspective, and the other half really out there to support the cops. They need this pay raise. They haven't had one for going on 4 years. They protect us. A big showing from the Chinatown International District as well. So it's kind of 50-50 split. They needed 7 of the 9 council members to pass this. Going into the day yesterday, we thought, we knew Shama Sawant would be a no. We thought that Mike O'Brien and Lisa Herbolt were maybe wild cards, not clear on which way they would go. They both ended up voting yes, but not without saying that they were doing it reluctantly, because they couldn't figure out that you couldn't do both things, get the cops their wages and get the accountability that could have gone further.
So the Seattle police, were that they were operating under the same contract for 4 years, the 2014 contract. Does that mean for the previous 4 years there has been no pay raises?
Yes.
Since 2014?
Yeah, they are making 2014 wages, which is a big deal. And depending on which side of the issue you talk to, you know, they've been the 2012 reforms that came under the consent decree, they've been implementing all of those. Much more oversight, much more work, much more, it's a lot more on their job than it used to be. But they're still making those older wages. So that's one of the reasons they try to give a lot of credit to the police, as they've done this. They've been good on reforms moving since that decree went in place and needed this pay raise. Plus, the cost of living here has just been, you know, skyrocketing ridiculously over those years. So this is a big deal. They'll get that pay raise now. It's supposed to kick in, I believe, in February of this next year after the mayor signs this.
And this pay raise is retroactive. So they're going to get a 4-year pay raise and one lump sum. Is that right?
It's like $65 million overall. Overall, it's 17% pay raise average over the 4 years of the contract. 6 years, I'm sorry.
I mean, that is a massive influx of money. So what struck me was that there was no controversy about the dollar amount that I mean, relatively speaking, that was just nothing. But for me, as I was reading it, I thought 4 years of retroactive pay with the mayor saying it's not fair for police to be earning 2014 wages in 2018. But, you know, now it's they're going to be earning 2018 wages from 2014. So, you know, if one's true, the other would also be true. You know, I mean, look, Seattle police have to put up with a lot. It's like you could call it the Sawant bonus or whatever, I think. But still, you know, that's going to impact retirement and other things. So, but that wasn't the real problem the activists had. The activists wanted these other items that were rolled back, these standards for firing officers, making it easier. And I take it they weren't actually satisfied with those standards either, right?
No, they, so again, that legislation that was passed by the city, which is connected to the consent decree, was such a big win, very celebrated last year, because all of these community members, the activists, were very excited because it created a 3-prong system: inspector general, the Office of Police Accountability, and the Community Police Commission, all civilian led. Major oversight of the department. There's some language in the contract that in some ways restricts some access as far as subpoenaing files and various things related to those civilian oversight groups. But it also solidifies that inspector general position, which was huge win for reforms. And that was one of the things that the council members kept pointing out before that vote yesterday, is that while there is room for maybe some more in here, it's a part of the give and take of any kind of labor agreement negotiations. You have to give, you have to take, both things. But overall, the spirit of this, they said, was better on reforms. The mayor echoed that, as did the police chief.
Now, it sounds like some of the council members were basically swallowing this as a poison, as a bitter pill. You know, they felt like, okay, well, we have to do it because the police aren't going to be around. You know, we're going to have some problems with policing this community.
Public safety, right?
Right. And we don't want that on us. And maybe we can get this other stuff later. The activists, for their part, seem to feel like, okay, well, there might have been the solidification of this one aspect, but we're rolling back the other, and that means the other one's going to be in jeopardy long haul anyway. And so it just sounds like a convoluted mess where you have activists wanting they want the police to have no risk, no risk of making a mistake. No, one of the problems I had with the statewide initiative was that some of the individuals pushing it using examples were kind of framing it to the public as though the police wildly overstepped their bounds. People were armed in certain cases, and they failed to follow proper instruction. And police are in a very unique position. It's not like you and me. It's they're confronting dangerous people, and most people, I think, judge police based on the television viewing habits that they have, and they see police, you know, disarming people with no weapons or shooting a weapon out of their hand or wounding them in the leg, and none of that is realistic in real life.
But there's this big push to de-escalate, so that's what we're talking about, right? When we're de-escalating, even if they are armed, even if it's like a John T. Williams walking with a carving knife, the big push in the state and in the city is to de-escalate that situation. Be prepared for that kind of thing. Learn how to walk that back so it doesn't end up in some sort of a shooting, is what you'd hear from the activists. That cops need to be better at even dealing with those when they're armed.
I think that'd be great. I just wish there was more consistency on the part of activists, where when you have someone who is unwilling to be de-escalated, that they would be willing to say, you know what? I guess, you know, that person was a family member of mine, but they weren't listening. You know, that's on them. It's a sad situation. Breaks my heart because I really wanted them to live a full life. But, you know, I'm not going to blame other people for the actions of the others. That's where I'm coming. I think they would make their voices so much more heard in the police community if there was more self-reflection on cases like that. So next big step is what? The judge?
The federal judge who oversees the consent decree said last week that he wouldn't take any action on reviewing this contract until the city council went officially and voted it up or down. That gave the city council members some cover, regardless of which way they ended up voting. Now it will go back to the federal judge. He will review this. Essentially, no one is really clear on what it means if he finds a conflict, an issue with it, and that it's not in line with the reforms. Essentially, what I've seen, according to recent court documents that I just got from the mayor's office, is that it says that he can, if there is some sort of conflict and it's warranted, and he feels it's warranted, he can create some sort of a solution, essentially. But it does not clarify what that would be, whether it requires what the steps are in that, essentially.
So if you're a police officer getting your retroactive 17% a year, right?
Yep.
17% a year, that's amazing.
No, 17 overall. I'm sorry, cumulative. Okay. Cumulative.
Well, but even that, that's a heck of a lot over 4 years. I'd cash that check. You know, cash that check as soon as you can.
Well,
Scott.
The other thing I want to point out really quickly is that something else that the city council member said yesterday, this contract, because it is retroactive, it's a 6-year contract, but it's up in 2 years. So again, the big message from the council yesterday was that there is some room for improvement, but we're going to have to reopen the talks here very soon, and then we can possibly get some more reforms in. So we'll see.
I know what my line of argument would be is in 2 years, I'd be saying, look, it's unfair for us in 2020 to be making 2018 wages. Let's get a retroactive again. Anna Scott, thanks so much for making the time.
You bet.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
All right, David Bowes in for Dory Monson. Coming up, socialists are outraged that Amazon has decided to locate in New York. They say, pack a bag and get back to Seattle. We'll cover that and more here on the Dory Monson Show. David Bowes filling in on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Heavy breathing has ensued just from the excitement surrounding the Dory Monson Show with that lovely opening tune. In New York, I was about to call it Amazon. In Amazon, which is the new name for New York, move over Big Apple. It's just the Amazon jungle now. There's some heavy breathing going on, but not of the pleasant variety. It is of the I'm outraged variety because some of the more socialist members of the New York City Council are upset that Bezos got such a sweet, sweet, sweet deal to come on over to the Big Apple. New York City Councilman Jimmy Van Bramer doesn't like how fast the whole thing happened.
Sewers, schools, parks, everything that a good community needs and deserves. And there was never enough money for that. But when Jeff Bezos needed $3 billion, the governor and the mayor found it sure damn quick.
One of the things I love about this whiner is he's upset that Amazon's coming, and you heard at the bottom of the hour news that they're going to be creating scads of jobs, right? And they're going to be investing in, what was it, the equivalent of three Empire State Buildings of office space. And they're going to be taxed on all that stuff, right? At some point, you know, the people that are working there, the jobs that are created, the income that's going to go, the revenue that's going to be generated by the sales of all this merchandise, this is going to be – there's a lot of money that's going to go back into the coffers. Whereas the things that the councilman's talking about here are one-off expenses. You know, so it's one thing to set up an environment to bring in a business. It's another thing to put the money – to spend the money on something that's not going to bring any money back in. And by the way, that doesn't mean I'm all that excited about giving sweetheart deals to specific businesses, because then you're kind of choosing winners and losers. I like it better when you create an environment that's great for all businesses. But this council member, Jimmy Van Bramer, thinks that the mayor and the governor, they deserve scorn and shame.
With a mass transit crisis, with a public housing crisis, with a million different things that we could have used this money for, the governor and the mayor conspired secretly to cut a deal with Jeff Bezos to the exclusion of everyone else.
And again, it's not like they're cutting a check for $3 billion and saying, Bezos, come on over. You know, it's structured vastly different from that. But I love how everything's the crisis. We have the mass transit crisis, the housing crisis, and you can bet if we talk to this guy long enough, absolutely everything would be the crisis. And the solution to the crisis is always more. It's more money, more, 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 more. And Amazon's the problem. More people getting employed, the value of property going up. You know, I saw a hilarious headline from it was on the MSN network, but it was a headline that said, the last time unemployment was this low, something really bad happened. I thought, well, you know, it's one thing to dislike the current administration. It's another thing to go out of your way to say, all right, unemployment's really low. How can I make this a negative news story? You know, Senator Mike Gianaris says Amazon should pack up and head back to where they came from.
We are here to say to Amazon, take that welcome mat that was rolled out for you yesterday, put it back in the package it came in, and send it back to Seattle where it belongs.
Yeah.
Now, I actually like this guy. I like what I'm picking up what he's throwing down, and I think there's something to be had there. I mean, I'd like it instead to go to Tacoma, you know, maybe Everett. But I like the idea of Amazon coming back to the Seattle area. I also don't want it to go unmentioned, the enthusiasm of the crowd that he's addressing, you know, when he tells them to go back to Seattle.
We are here to say to Amazon, take that welcome mat that was rolled out for you yesterday, put it back in the package it came in, and send it back to Seattle where it belongs.
Yeah.
It sounds like he has like three friends that are there. Yeah, this is the part where he said, we're supposed to cheer. And none of them they're all on their phones. You know, they're ordering stuff from Amazon as they speak, or they're buying apartments, you know, investing in the apartments already.
This is a bad deal. The state and the city should both be embarrassed to be standing behind this deal. Yeah. They got taken, plain and simple.
It's another one. Just, yeah, yeah. It's, what, could he not find anyone enthusiastically supporting his point of view? You know, activists are usually... Think about the Sawant crowds. I mean, they're ready to rock, and that's who's going to be really excited about this thing. And yet they can't even muster up the outrage.
The subways are in crisis. We don't have enough public school seats. The rents are going through the roof in Long Island City.
Why didn't they get the rent is too damn high guy into this. That guy could generate some enthusiasm. But instead, we got this boring guy with this boring crowd telling people that he wants Amazon out of there. He knows he's just tilting at windmills, grandstanding at a big fat nothing. Everybody outraged there has the Amazon app on their phone, and they're probably ordering stuff on Amazon for Christmas as we speak.
And just yesterday, just because this deal was announced, the predatory speculators came to town and started buying up apartments by text message without even seeing the apartment.
You know, it's a weird thing. It's predatory, but also, you know, as soon as he said it, I thought, man, I wish I'd have thought of that. You know, I wish I could buy an apartment there, you know, invest in it. Although, remember, sometimes that's the kind of thing that gets into trouble because somebody else is building, say, a new apartment. So the overall supply goes up, and then your investment in that what you thought was going to be a limited apartment doesn't quite pan out the way you thought it might. So, you know, the predators, they can get their own unless it's actually a decent investment. So then New York, which is, remember, this is the toughest of the tough. You ever meet folks from New York, they're always talking about how tough it is in New York. They've survived the Big Apple. It's it is huge. It's impressive. If you've never been to New York, you know, when you fly into it, you know, London is just huge. It's just vast and expanded, and it seems to cover a forever amount of territory. And it makes Seattle look like a postage stamp. But New York is both vast and high. You know, New York, you've got those skyscrapers that just tower into the sky, and that goes on forever. So there's really nothing like it. I'll grant you that. But it turns out New York has a weak spot, and it's not the, you know, four-story or six-story tall gorilla that climbs the Empire State Building. It's Jeff Bezos.
The infrastructure of Long Island City is already being stretched to its limits. This is a community that's bursting at the seams. Good people that have made Long Island City so great that Jeff Bezos wants to come here are being priced out of their own homes.
All right, so there's no room for Jeff Bezos. He's got to stay out of there. Progress should stop in New York because otherwise property values will go up. You know, the logic of that position, by that kind of logic, you would want to decline in New York so that more people could afford and better afford to live there. You know, it's not a sustainable point of view. There's room in New York for Bezos. You know, if New York could house Trump for that long, I'm sure they can handle Bezos. He seems like, you know, a slightly calmer guy, more focused on business, and plus you'll have all kinds of faster delivery for your products. Good news for you. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You can text us your comments anytime on the Online Trading Academy text line. Just text us at 989-73-98-973. So, in Australia, an Australian state senator has been upset because when he brought up the subject of abortion, he was often shot down because he was a man. And he looks a little bit like he could play Colonel Sanders and be one of the guys that steps in as the KFC spokesperson. You know, don't you think?
I mean, yes. What's his name? Starts with the name.
Colonel Sanders.
Yeah. No.
Who are you thinking of?
He has a name though.
What you?
Anyway, I'll get to it. We did this story last week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. All right. Anyway.
Anyway, so, yes, looks like Colonel.
I just go, Colonel Sanders. So the Australian senator, he says he's outraged by his inability to speak on this issue that he's very passionate about. And he was told to, quote, get his hands and his rosaries off of my ovaries by one other member of the Australian parliament. So he decided that he would take matters to an extreme level. And make that comment no longer applicable to him.
By the way, it's Harland.
To him.
Harland.
Oh, that's the name of the colonel?
Yes.
Colonel Harland? All right. So, yes, he does look like that. But he says, look, I'm going to change how I identify so that you can no longer criticize me this way.
Because I had the audacity to raise issues around late-term abortions where babies that are only minutes away from getting a smack on the arse and a name, being aborted under the policies of the Australian Greens. So I will not stand silent. I will not stand mute while these people try to continue to marginalise policies and ideas that we want to discuss for this nation that I think are largely supported still by the majority of the nation. There's no question about that. They are an ever-increasingly silent majority because they're not game to speak. I've had it in here. I've moved sensible motions here, reflecting the views of so many people in our society, only to have formality denied. No, well, you've been part of it, Senator Hinch. I'm going to declare my gender today as I can to be a woman, and then you'll no longer be able to attack me.
All right, so he's decided he is now a woman. Another member of parliament stepped into the fray and said, hey, look, when you were criticizing him regarding the rosary, your attack was based on his religion, so you have to rescind the remark. And the remark was ultimately rescinded. Now, generally, I don't like sloganeering as political argument. You know, you know that the only reason that the rosaries and ovaries were attached together, because the issue is not ovaries, right? It's something else here entirely. But they've got alliteration. It's got a rhyming scheme. And people in politics and activist politics seem to think that if you can get something to rhyme and repeat it loud and often enough, then that's an argument unto itself. And it becomes ridiculous. Now, it's also ridiculous, of course, for a guy that looks like Colonel Sanders to step up and say he's identifying as a woman. But then again, the gold medal winner of a certain Olympic sport also says that. I mean, the whole thing is very confusing. So he's taking advantage of the confusion to say, hey, look, you can't criticize me on this one anymore. Now the argument should just be based on whatever is said, not who we are. No more ad hominem attacks. You just got to focus on what it is that's being said. So I don't know that he decided to re-identify later. I'm a little unclear. I think Australia did legalize same-sex marriage a while back. So if he's a married guy, I don't think that would matter too much now. I mean, a couple of years ago, he might have been in a little trouble, but I want to say that it was last year that their courts switched that around, or the people did one way or the other. So the Australian senator is very pleased now that he can. But surprisingly enough, his motion did fail by about 2-1. So he's still working on some arguments, but his sudden conversion to being a woman didn't quite work for him. All right, the latest theory from CNN is that Donald J. Trump has staged the attack on Jim Acosta.
If he wants a kept group of people that will just do whatever he wants, then he can go to Fox. But if he wants to hold a real press conference where people hold his feet to the fire, then he can't get petulant and say, oh, I don't like those questions, get out of my White House.
By the way, you didn't need the microphone. People yell out questions all the time.
Well, of course. And you know what? I mean, I've been in enough crowds where there are hecklers. You want to control somebody, you turn the microphone off. You don't send some poor intern into a crowd to take the microphone away.
So Don Lemon thinks it's staged. He's agreeing with his guest, the whole thing's staged, because the intern went to get the microphone. I've been to plenty of meetings where the intern tries to go get the microphone. It's not the best person to get it because usually they're timid and you have to be willing to actually hold on to it strongly. But
that's their plan. Yeah,
this is kind of Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, when you're interrupting the president, you get the microphone taken away. That's pretty much how it works.